Okay, we're going to bring the Senate Finance to order. Today is Monday, April 7th, and it is 9:10. And with us today is the full committee, which consists of Co-Chair Kelly, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, and Vice Chair Fairclough, and myself, Senator Meyer. So appreciate everyone being here, and it looks like everyone, for the most part, survived skits on Saturday, so which was very good and entertaining. Is there anything to come before the committee before we get started? Yeah. I know there were several people knocking on Kevin's door this weekend, so. All right, today's agenda is the capital budget, Senate Bill 119. Will be the first item we take up, and then we'll hopefully get to Senate Bill 178, which is the passenger vehicle rental tax. I think that one is ready to move. And then new bills, that will be a bill previously heard. New bills would be Senate Bill 201, criminal trespass on private property, and House Bill 19, permanent motor vehicle registration. And House Bill 263, extend senior benefits program. So we'll see how far we get in the next 2 hours. So let's start then with Senate Bill 119, the capital budget. Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt the Senate Finance Committee substitute for SB 119 version 28-GS2672/0, drafter Martin, dated 4-6-2-14, as the working document before the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Kelly. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, then we have that CS. I believe everybody has a copy here at the table, and I think the folks in the audience probably want a copy as well, so we're going to take a brief at ease. Okay, we're going to bring the Senate Finance back to order. I'm assuming everyone in the audience who wanted a copy of the capital budget has received one. If you could try not to shuffle too many papers, though, as we go through the budget itself. And also, just for the record, the version we're working under, the CS Community Substitute for Senate Bill 119, is version O, as in octopus. I don't know. Orange. How's that? Orange. Not zero, but Oscar. Oscar works. Yeah, Oscar's good. Okay, thank you. Okay, so at this point in time, I am going to ask my lifeline and the person who's been spending many hours of her life, days and months, working on this, and who's also my top 40 under 40, Ms. Armstrong, could you work the numbers for us, and then after we go through the numbers, and we'll kind of just briefly go over some of the highlights of the budget itself. So, Ms. Armstrong, if you put your name on the record, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Suzanne Armstrong, SAPTA, Senator Meyer in the Senate Finance Committee. I'll point members' attention to the multi-year agency summary that was prepared by the Legislative Finance Division. The first column is the represents the numbers that are spent by agency in the FY15 capital budget. It totals $1,877,189,000. Of that, unrestricted general funds is $539.4 million. Designated general funds, $129.3 million. Other state funds, $109 million. And just a little bit over $1 billion in federal receipts. The second column represents the FY14 capital supplemental. The total is $5,073,000, of which $2.9 million is unrestricted general funds and $2.1 million is designated general funds. The third column, Mr. Chairman, is the FY2014 supplemental operating, for a total of $24 million. The total is $43.2 million. $39.3 million is unrestricted general funds, $103,000 is designated general funds, other state funds totals $3.8 million, and there is a $45,000 reduction in federal receipts. That's it, Mr. Chairman.
That's it. Okay. Well, we'll try to anticipate some questions here. Can you tell us what the reduction is of this budget versus last year?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As compared to the enacted capital budget, it is roughly in total funds, a $403.5 million reduction from last year. This represents $445.9 million in unrestricted general funds, $97 million in designated general funds, $30 million in other state funds, but it does in the federal receipt component is increased by about $170 million.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ms. Armstrong. I don't know. I'm anticipating questions here from committee members, so. Of this UGF spend, obviously some of that was obtained by reductions made in the governor's budget. Are you prepared to talk about reductions that were made to the governor's budget?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. In the bill that's before the committee right now, between the FY14 supplemental and the FY15 proposed, approximately $102 million of reductions are included in this bill. Unrestricted general funds were reduced by $88.5 million. Designated general funds were reduced by $17 million. And we increased other state funds by about $3.8 million. Of the $88 million reduction in unrestricted general funds, Mr. Chairman, approximately $32.7 million of that was for the requested FY14 supplemental for Sioux City and Wantana. In the FY15 reductions, $5 million for positive train control for the Alaska Railroad was reduced from the governor's request of $15 million. And approximately $18 million was reduced from the University of Alaska's deferred maintenance budget. There was about a $10 million reduction in the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. However, working with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, we were able to identify projects that had been completed yet were still open on the books, and we were able to work with them to repurpose those funds towards their FY15 priorities. So while they show here as a $10 million reduction, they actually appear in the language section reappropriated to FY15 projects.
Okay, very good. And also I want to thank Ms. Rayfield with the Office of Budget. What is it?
Management and Budget, sir.
Okay, Management and Budget for your cooperation and help in helping us find some of these reductions. I'm not sure she agrees with all of them, but she was very helpful. Okay, questions from committee members. And by the way, all these numbers I know Ms. Armstrong rattled them off very quickly and has them off the top of her head, and it's probably Greek to the folks listening, but it's my understanding these reports, these numbers are all available. Is that through our ledge finance, or how do folks get access to them?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After this committee hearing, ledge finance will post a series of reports on their website.
Okay, excellent. Okay, questions, committee members, on anything you've heard thus far before we let Ms. Armstrong go? Okay. Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Yes, I wonder if she could go over the school construction, what's in here for the school construction for this next year.
Thank you, through the chairman, Senator Hoffman. I'll direct members' attention to page 31, beginning lines 15. There are two projects that are listed here. Last year, the legislature appropriated half the amount of the construction for Queetluck K through 12 replacement school. The $31.5 million that's listed here on page 17 is the second half to complete the funding for the construction of the school. The second project that's included in here is St. Mary's School District at $11.7 million. And that is the first school after Kivalina that's on the new school construction list. Kivalina is slated for funding in FY16, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you,
Senator
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Additional questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Armstrong. Okay, and I'm just going to go through briefly some highlights, and then we'll set this aside. I do encourage all committee members to go through the report very closely, especially the language section, to make sure whatever reappropriations you asked us to make that we made and made them correctly. I think that what you'll find in this capital budget is it does follow the goals that we'd set early on. First of all, our main goal was to bring the capital budget down and to show a downward trend in our capital budget. Obviously, last year we had almost $1 billion reduction. This year, as Ms. Armstrong said, it's another $400 million reduction. So I think with the decline in production and revenue, I think both the operating and capital budgets are headed in the right direction. A concern that always comes up is that, well, gee, if you keep reducing the capital budget so much, you know, what's that going to do to our economy? I actually think our economy is very strong. We still have almost a $1.9 billion capital budget here. We have several billion, I think the number is over $4 billion of capital money that's been encumbered but not spent yet from previous capital budgets and bonds that we've passed. And then I think later on, Senator Bishop is going to tell us what he's experienced and seen up in Fairbanks as far as the private sector and how since passage of Senate Bill 21, we're seeing a huge activity upswing on the private sector side. So I think our economy is personally, I'm not an economist, but I think we're in great shape going forward. So the goal obviously was to maintain our current assets, finish what we started, and then have money for various districts to invest in critical projects in various districts and regions. So what you'll find in this 2015 budget, fiscal year 2015 budget, is for maintaining our current assets, $90 million in deferred maintenance of our state-owned facilities. As far as items that that we started and want to finish, you'll see $37.5 million for the State Library Archive and Museum, this are commonly referred to as SLAM, that will finish that project. That's right outside our window here. So hopefully we won't see that crane too much longer. You'll see $45.6 million to complete the engineering school at the University of Alaska Anchorage campus. That will finish that engineering school. We left $10 million for the engineering school at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Again, my intent, goal was to finish that one as well. But I have been convinced, and I think the committee has, that from the folks at from UAF and the university system in general, and from Senator Kelly in particular, that it doesn't do any good to finish that building if you can't heat it. And so what you'll see, it's not in the current version of this CS, but will be in the next CS that comes out hopefully on Wednesday, how we plan to address the power plant at the UAF campus. So, and then as far as critical projects in individual districts and regions, we heard about the need, very much the need for pertaining to domestic violence and sexual assault, and there's almost $7 million in grants that is going to go for deferred maintenance of shelters throughout the state of Alaska for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. And certainly, unfortunately, we heard about the problem with the chronic inebriate and recidivism. Again, especially at Anchorage in the Fairview area, a lot of public testimony on that. And so there, you'll see $5 million going to the Aquila House to deal with that issue. And then, of course, some money towards Senator Kelly's FAS programs. A lot of that is being funded, though, with the alcohol tax money, not UGF. And other critical items in our areas, of course, are the public and community facilities, health clinics, libraries, etc. You will see $8 million in the capital budget for the Lusac Library in Anchorage. Let's see, what else? There's a lot of public safety, water, wastewater, roads over $100 million. Again, some of the bigger roads that you'll see as you go through there, Yosemite Road in Eagle River for $8 million, Anchorage Museum for $5 million. Out the northwest part of the state, you got the Nome Port improvements, $3 million. The north in Kotzebue, Northwest Magnet Schools, $5.5 million. Education, Ms. Armstrong already addressed some of the big schools, but also we maintained and kept the Governor's Alaska Digital Initiative that was $5 million. I'm not going to go through all the projects. You can certainly read those, but those are just some examples of critical needs that various members brought to our attention for the various districts and regions throughout the state. So with that, I think that concludes my comments. Any questions, comments from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I just wanted to dovetail on just a little bit to maybe encapsulate what your comments, and they're great. And we do have a healthy capital budget. in any state's eyes, I think this capital budget would be an envy. With that being said, you know, Anchorage, you look at their unemployment rate, you know, it's at 4.1%. In any economist's mind, that would be full employment. So the private sector is humming along very well. Statewide, I think we're below 7, about 6.7, 6.6 statewide, still trending below the national average. But interesting, a week ago I was home and I live close to the railroad yard, laydown yard, where the railroad changes all their freight that comes to Fairbanks. And it was kind of a deja vu moment for me. The winter of 84-85 was a huge drilling season on the North Slope. The industry was doing a tremendous amount of infield drilling and to bring Prudhoe to its full potential. Now it was almost like deja vu all over again. I take notice, right? Because I spent a lot of my career on the North Slope and I've handled a lot of drill casing. But with that being said, it was interesting to see that. And then we had a chance to go back with the governor and up on Wednesday and tour that railroad yard. And I know we talked about positive train control here, and we're all kind of concerned about the railroad and the future right now with the North Pole refinery and where that transition is. But it's good to see the railroad is picking up slack now on freight coming north with pipe, drill casing, drilling fluids, chemicals, rig mats. All that's associated with new infield development and getting more production. So it was encouraging. And the other great takeaway out of that was after meeting with the railroad that they're looking on putting on more employees to handle the added increase in drill casing. So that was a very positive sign. So hopefully I think it appears to be working. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Bishop. You're using some of your Commissioner of Labor numbers there, which is good. Okay. Anything else from committee members? Before we get off this topic, though, I certainly do want to thank our Ledge Finance folks for all their help as well. Rob, Dave, Teal, Amanda, they're all right behind me. You're all very familiar with them. We couldn't do this without them. In fact, I think Rob, anyway, for sure, maybe the others all got a bout of that 24-hour flu that was going around, so that made it an additional challenge for all of us. So, okay, with that, then let's take a brief at ease, and we'll believe the first bill we'll take up is Senate Bill 178. Brief at ease. Okay, we're going to bring Senate Finance back to order. We are going to postpone taking up Senate Bill 178 for the time being. We're waiting on a letter of intent that was not ready. So with that, we'll take up Senate Bill 201, which is criminal trespass on private property. And we do have the sponsor of the bill here, Senator Stedman, if he would like to join us, if he wants to bring his trusty staff. Mr. Peterson, I think he was here as well. The Senator Stedman is going to introduce us to the bill, explain what the bill does, and then he's requested that we hold it. So we will do that, but we do need to at least hear what the bill is about. So, Senator Stedman, the floor is yours, sir. Welcome to Senate, back to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's nice to be back. I'm Bert Stedman, representing our senator from District Q, representing most of Southeast, south of Juneau, come next year anyway. So the bill before you, you can see, is a pretty small bill. Only has three lines, two of which just takes to the point of introduction, and then the bill is on line number three, and it's just a repeater clause. And what we're trying to do here, dealing with private land, is to get some flexibility for the private landowners to not have to post no trespassing signs on every reasonable entrance in your property. Some properties are fairly large, some of them are fairly small. But when we look back in the attitude of a lot of Alaskans over the last 100 years, putting up no trespassing signs, a lot of us find it offensive. When we're out hunting and fishing and doing either subsistence or recreation, you know, there's a lot of remote cabins and isolated parcels. And it seems like when you have, for instance, cabins and you put up no trespassing signs and locks on the door, you just encourage people to trespass and shoot the locks off or break the doors down. So a lot of our cabins around the state do not even have locks on their doors. Clearly, people are welcome to use those cabins when they're have some exposure to the elements and they're worried about life, health, and safety issues. So that's not a problem with or without any postings. But I think it's more reasonable, Mr. Chairman, that you post rather than every reasonable access point, that you do have at least one sign on your property prominently posted as no trespassing if you so choose. The intent here, Mr. Chairman, is not to have, for instance, if one of the citizens of the state, maybe from Bethel, happens to walk across a corner of someone's parcel to get to a creek to do a little bit of fishing or do a little bit of hunting, that you run out and that particular citizen is prosecuted. Now, the courts are far too busy dealing with substance and drug abuse and crimes of mayhem and murder than to be messing around with somebody that happened to walk across a particular individual's property. So this bill, Mr. Chairman, is a very small bill. I'm certainly open to adjustments from the committee. We can even talk about adjusting the earlier bill today in it if we expand the title, but I wouldn't recommend doing it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think we want to do that, Senator Stedman. Okay, well, questions for Senator Stedman? Senator Faircliffe.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Senator Stedman, how do you think the courts will perceive the action as far as their ability to punish someone who does set up a structure on another person's private property or hunting a hunting cache, or will we create, by eliminating the burden to the property owner, a new burden that they won't be able to appropriately defend their rights as a landowner because they haven't done something now? It got on the books for a reason, so someone was well intended.
Right. Well, I'm not an attorney. Better count the money in the treasury, I guess. Some would say, some wouldn't. But There is no intent here to change the historic private ownership rights of individuals. As an example, if Senator Dunleavy has a cabin out in the remote wilderness in interior Alaska, which is pretty remote to the boys down here in southeast, I've got no right to go up there and build a cabin on his private property and then claim his land. There is adverse possession laws on the books. If someone uses your property, pays taxes on your property, uses it in an open way, there is adverse possession issues, and it doesn't change that. But you don't have to post a no trespassing sign on your property to block somebody from coming building a cabin or a fish camp on it. This does not change that. What it does do, though, is loosen the requirements a little bit on the landowner, so he doesn't have to, or she doesn't have to have posted no trespassing signs, because a lot of Alaskans find them very offensive. And I personally think it encourages more vandalism than if you have remote property and you don't. And in this example, Senator Dunleavy, may have a cabin out in the wilderness, and as people are more apt to respect it and leave it alone undamaged if he doesn't plaster no trespassing signs all over it, put a big brass lock on the door. It just invites someone to shoot the lock off, go in there and do what they're going to do, muck it up, versus maybe squat in it for a couple of days when they're hunting and leave stuff alone, and or preferably leave a note behind that they were there.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stedman, I believe that your original version that was introduced sought to eliminate both B and C of 1146.350. Can you speak to me about what happened in judiciary and why the CS before us is different than what you originally proposed?
Well, the original proposal was you wouldn't have to put a sign up at all. And I think the Judiciary Committee thought that that was a reasonable initial submission of the bill, but in their review they concluded that that was probably not preferred, that this would be a better alternative to require at least one sign posted. And I thought that was reasonable. But I think having to post a sign every, and I don't have the language in front of me, every reasonable access point is a little over the top, because there's weather conditions and other things where it would be difficult to ensure that they're up all the time. And frankly, I personally think that's a little too restrictive or too much of a requirement on a landowner. Although we don't have roads in southeast per se on most of our islands. Prince of Wales has quite a few, but most of the islands don't have a lot of roads in the remote properties. But we have a lot of properties that are not a lot. There's a few properties around southeast that are along the shorefront, and having by the technical writing of the statute the way it is there, technical interpretation, you'd have to plaster your shorefront with no trespass signs, and it's just, people just find it offensive. Even the conversations I've had with some of the native land in southeast, they prefer to just put up a sign owned by versus no trespassing, because it's just it's a cultural issue, I guess, with the long-term Alaskans. It's just offensive. We should be able to hunt and fish and move around the state as much as absolutely possible.
Anything else, Senator Fairclough? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 95% of the private land in Alaska is owned by Native corporations, and I don't see any position paper in here on this legislation from them. Do you know if they support or oppose this legislation?
My conversations with Sea Alaska, they don't like no trespassing signs. They prefer to have a sign owned by Sea Alaska posted, and as far as I know, they're in support of it. I don't have that bill packet in front of me, but as far as I know, there's no issues with regional corporations. And I think on that point, Mr. Chairman, take a one of the native corporations that own vast tracts of land, hundreds of thousands of acres, having them plastering no trespassing signs over every reasonable entrance is I think, a little bit much of a requirement versus what this bill would require. You know, one sign. And if I could add, Mr. Chairman, because there has been some discussion in the past. You know, now with a lot of technology nowadays, most people have some kind of positioning device with them, GPS. A lot of guys and gals still go out without that. There's other ways of knowing where you're at. But it's pretty common to know where they, if with any interest at all, to find out where the private land is or isn't. And again, we're not trying to restrict the ability of an individual anytime there's life, health, safety issues, or have somebody walk across a corner of someone's land to fish for a trout and then have the long arm of the law come haul them off to Lemon Creek or our new Goose Creek prison. That is not what we're doing here.
Okay. Go ahead, Senator Dunleavy. Will you finish, Senator Huffman? I'm sorry. Okay. Senator Dunleavy?
So, correct me if I'm wrong, currently, if you are up in, some would say, real Alaska, and you're driving your snow machine across hundreds of miles of territory, you're inevitably crossing property. And that currently, if it's not marked trespass, you're not, technically speaking, you're not trespassing. With the passage of this bill, as you go across that country, you would be technically, would you be technically trespassing at that time? How does the bill change that concept, if it does at all?
Well, understood.
Mr. Chairman, I think you are, it'd be a better question for a lawyer, but I think you are trespassing when you go on someone's private property without their permission. In this case, a snowmobiler, which we don't really have in Southeast as much of exposure to the snowmobiles because we are heavily forested. We're trying to thin them a little bit, but we still got a lot of forest. So we don't have that issue. But even under the current statute, you'd have to, you know, have it posted every reasonable access to go out and prosecute the guy for trespass. But I don't think there's any interest from the Department of Law to prosecute people for driving a snow machine across someone's corner of his property, your property. It's I suppose if they made a snow machine trail across your property, you could have some discussions with them about terminating that or go through some civil action to remedy that situation.
One more.
Go ahead, Senator Dunleavy.
Would your bill change existing law regarding hunting, trapping, fishing, and how that's done?
Yes. The existing law, as an example, there was up in your neck of the woods, there was an incident where a trapper went into some private land. It wasn't posted in his, from my understanding of the press, where he pulled off the road. Therefore, he wasn't technically criminally trespassing or whatever, so that gave some wiggle room. Even though he knew that, my understanding from the press, that the individual knew that that was private land. That was one of the impetuses of this bill, is situations like that. This bill would require that the landowner just have one posting, so they can't, an individual can't fall back on that excuse and use that excuse to enter private land, in this case trapping, knowing that you know, it's in the gray area. Mr. Chairman, I think it's more applicable to the higher population center areas than it is in Southeast. Southeast, we have mostly federal land. You know, there's a lot more private land up in the interior and a lot of more hinterland that is accessed by the individuals.
Well, I think Senator Dunleavy brings up some good points, especially in Matsu Valley and down in Girdwood, I guess. You do have issues of squatters, you know, people who basically just see empty land and decide to this is where they're going to live. So if we don't have the signs posted, how does the private landowner pursue these squatters and try to get them off their property?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it changes the action a private landowner would have to take to get a squatter off. He doesn't or she doesn't have the right to squat. You have to go through the court system, I guess, to alleviate that. This doesn't change that. It doesn't give them added rights to go build and take adverse possession of your property.
So the squatter wouldn't be able to say, well, there's no signs. I didn't know it was private property?
As an example, I've got some remote land. There's no trespassing signs on that property. There's some signs on the back side of it saying you're entering the federal forest, the Tongass National Forest. But on the water side, there's no signage. But Senator Hoffman doesn't have any right to go build a fish camp there on my private land, even though it's not posted, without an amendment to this bill. I wouldn't be able to do that. I would have to have a long arm of the law go talk to him, I guess, to get rid of him, regardless if this bill passes or doesn't. In this particular case, I have no trespassing signs on it, but people don't have the right to go build structures and live on that land.
So you Senator Stemmen, you have signs on your private property.
The other parcel of private property I own, well, several, but the other parcel along the waterfront when I bought it had no trespassing signs up. I took them down because people just find it offensive. There's less vandalism not having a signage of no trespassing. Under this bill, you could just put up one sign. Under the current statute, you may have to put up multiple. As an example, I've got 3,000 feet of beachfront. In two contiguous parcels, I suppose I could put up a sign every 100 feet, no trespassing, and plaster the waterfront. It would look awful. In this case, I don't have any. And with or without this particular piece of legislation, I have no personal intention of putting up a no trespassing sign on my remote property. But I'll guarantee you nobody's squatting on it. And if they did, they wouldn't be there long.
Okay. Senator Dunleavy?
Through the chair, from your perspective, Senator, is the issue trespassing in the sense of getting from one point to the other, or is the issue activities conducted on one's property by somebody else?
Mr. Chairman, I think the Senator Dunleavy brings up a good point. The direction is a latter part of your comment, the activity. It's not if Senator Bishop is out hunting and he, drags a moose across the corner of your land or walks across it to harvest a game animal. It doesn't change the effect that to shoot, to hunt on private land, you need their permission. This doesn't change that.
But getting from point A to point B, just traversing.
And as an example, if you had some remote land and I transversed across your property and you were going to try to, get the long arm of the law on me for trespass, there's a lot bigger fish to fry for the state troopers and the judiciary, the NAT, and I don't think you'd get a very good reception from the district attorney if you wanted to personally, under some civil statute, litigate it. Again, you're looking at a lot of costs. I think just cleaning up the statute where a guy has to or a gal has to post it one time versus multiple times would take care of this, as an example, this issue with a trapper going on private land, knowing it's private land. C is an area that should have been posted, wasn't posted, and just uses that as an excuse to go in there and trap versus talking to, like in this case, earlier case, I talked to, Dunleavy about using his cabin or crossing his land.
One last question.
Sure, go ahead.
So if you have a large parcel of land up north, I won't say the real Alaska again. But a large parcel of land up north, under your bill, you just need one sign, even though you may be coming in 6 miles away from that sign traversing the land. The one sign would trigger the entire parcel as you've been notified, even though you may be 6 miles away from the sign.
There's no, as far as I know, there's no size restriction on it. So if you happen to be fortunate enough to own a 6-acre parcel, you may want to consider putting more signage up if you want, but technically the law would require one sign.
Thank you. Just trying to understand if it was traversing or the activities on the land as opposed to passing through. Thanks.
Edward, clearly the intent is not to hassle the individual Alaskans that are happen to be transversing. I suppose if they're wearing a trail through the property, you, as a landowner, you might have something to say about that. But if you know somebody just happens to be there, I'll give you a personal example. Last early November, a fella anchored a boat in front of a parcel I have, and his boat ended up on the beach. His tie lines broke. Got back from hunting, is wet and cold. Troopers heard him talking to the Coast Guard on the radio. Troopers showed up, give him some assistance, and it was blowing, 30, 40 knots down the bay, so the troopers, they couldn't do anything with his boat. Gave him the choice to come home with the troopers and could go back and deal with his boat or stay. And I happened to have a tarped shack with a wood stove and stuff like that in it, kind of a glorified survival shack. He decided to stay there and then deal with his boat when the wind comes down. I heard about it through the grapevine because that's pretty good jungle drums on the island. Talked to the troopers and called the guy, and he's just wet and cold and wants to stay warm. I don't have any problems with that. In fact, he appreciated having dry firewood stacked by the wood stove and a couple days of food in the cupboard. I think that's just being a good neighbor and a good Alaskan owning remote property. Now, if the guy decided to move in, I'd probably have a different opinion. But I had no issue with them using that as a, warm his son up. He's worried about hypothermia and issues like that. That's what these places are for.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Stedman and Senator Dunleavy. Let's why don't we go ahead and do the public testimony at this point in time. We have a few people who want to testify. We also have Captain Burke Waldron with Alaska Wildlife Troopers available for questions. But let's take first person for public testimony is Nicolene Jordan. Nicolene, are you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
Nicolene, don't think I hear you.
Can you hear me?
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
I can.
Okay, there you go. Now we can hear you.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, and if you could put your name on the record and then proceed with the testimony, please.
My name is Nicolene Jordan. I kind of stirred up some controversy when I contacted the press about my trespassing problem. Well, it wasn't my problem, actually, but I wanted to bring up a couple of points after listening, and I want to thank Senator Stedman for bringing this to everyone's attention. The problem is basically the signage. The trespassers mostly the trespassers are hiding behind the signage that we're required to put a certain amount of signage up with our names and phone numbers and all of that on there, but that's just an excuse. And we're not talking, and first, for the record, I am not anti-trapping or hunting. I'm an Alaskan. I've been here for 35 years. That's not my problem. My problem is with trespassing. And we're talking about the malicious trespassers. We're not just talking about, somebody just, unwittingly walking across the corner of your property. We're talking about malicious activities here. But the problem is the signage, and everything else stays the same. But in this day and age, the technology of figuring out where you are is there for everybody to use, and it's just a poor excuse the signage thing is a poor excuse. The problem is the signs. So as property owners, when we call the troopers, their excuse to not prosecute or arrest or whatever is the signage. That was the first question out of their mouth when I called them. They asked me if I had signs up. Well, I do have signs up, but they don't have my name and address on them, and they're not every 60 feet, but I do have signs up. And where they came into the property, the access was blocked with logs and rocks. It was an obvious statement that we didn't want anybody in that access. So the signage was just an excuse for them to do whatever. But now I'd like to bring up a scenario, and I want you to think about this for a minute. I own a gravel business. I deal with a lot of contractors that are, you know, clearing lots and digging holes and trying to figure out places to put the stumps, and they're all looking for dump sites. So if your property is not posted with a no dumping sign, why can't we just go and dump all the stumps on your property? I mean, it's common sense. We're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. They know they'll get in trouble for doing that, so it's common sense that they don't do that. So the sign doesn't make any difference in that instance, but why does the sign is just not important. The problem is keeping the people off private property, especially the malicious ones. That's the big one. And like I said earlier, if a wildlife trooper doesn't know where he's at, or, I mean, we need to clarify this. We can't just let every Tom, Dick, and Harry use the excuse of the signs. The sign thing has got to go. That's my opinion, and I appreciate the time to speak. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Don't see any questions, so we're going to move on now to Fairbanks and Al Brett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, sir. Thank you for joining us today.
For the record, my name is Al Barrett. I reside in Fairbanks, Alaska. I guess the real Alaska, according to this last conversations. What I clearly see here, what the bill is trying to do, is clearly define what a citable or lessen the requirements for a citable offense. I think as the bill is currently amended with just repealing Section C, I'm pretty comfortable with that. As a person that makes his living off the land, 99% of my income comes from wildlife resources off the lands. It's very difficult. People have alluded to saying it's very easy. You need a GPS, and all your problems will be solved. Well, a GPS only tells you where you're at. It doesn't tell you the status of the land, and that takes multiple resources to figure out what the status of a particular piece of land is. And how current that data is, because as many of you know, we just went through another formalization of Native Select Land, so those aren't even in any computer system that's ready for the public to access to know where Native Select Lands are. And as you use RS-4277 right-of-ways, waterways, lakes, and roads, some of them are surveyed in, some of them aren't. The easements, there's no two easements alike in this state. You can travel the road from here to from Fairbanks to Juneau or Anchorage, and that easement will vary from mile marker to mile marker, and that's from, you know, DOT making deals with private property owners. So it's not as easy as people think it is, and I'm a very pro property owner rights person, and I think some signage, if you don't want people cutting across a corner of a property or accessing your land, that it's not reasonable just to have a sign. I'm in total agreement that you don't have to require it by so many feet, so big of a sign, so much information on it. But just letting the public know that this is either owned or we don't want you trespassing would be really nice. And, you know, there's always civil action when you can't get a citable offense, just like that happened with the trooper and the other young man trapping. You know, they had to go to civil court to figure that out, and it was dealt with. You know, I think you're going to make a change in this law, and it will be all right. But But the same thing boils down to is you have to contact a trooper has to show up in time before the party that infracted your property has to stay there or just leave. And if there's no identification or, you know, that's a big problem too. So I like the way the bill is trying to go. I like that you just have to have the sign and not the sideboards of requiring so many signs per feet, how big of a sign and whatnot. But I think, and I don't think this bill was clearly put out neither, because I think Part B still requires you to post signs at reasonable entrances to your property. Part C, which is being repealed, is a lot of the other restrictions. And so if it is true that all you have to have is one sign on your acreage, well, that's fairly unreasonable, too, if you have it on the back corner of your property where most people might be accessing it from a riverbank or from an RS-427 right-of-way. So I would ask that you make that clear, too, because I didn't really see that in the language I read this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the time for letting me testify.
Great. Thank you, Al, for that testimony. Okay, we have one more person in Anchorage, Mary Nanuak. Mary, are you with us?
My name is Mary Nanuak. Hello?
Hello, yes, we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we sure can. Please proceed with your testimony.
Okay. I have questions and comments to make to Senator Stedman. And I want to thank people like Lyman and Senator Dunleavy, who are always trying to correct Senator Stedman from his death to give talk. And I thank your patient efforts to educate people like him over and over and over again. Maybe someday it'll sink in. And then like things like common sense, I don't think common sense makes any sense to him. And when he says that, when he says, oftentimes from one sentence to another conflicts with what he says. And when he says that, I'm opposed to signs, yes, you can have signs. And then when he says, Senator Dunleavy, you can get land there to, and Senator so-and-so, you can get land there. It's like inviting, yes, if you do it my way, you'll get money. And then he says that in order to settle things, we have to go to court. And people don't have money to go to court. And even if state troopers, fishing wildlife people trespass, they should be fined as well. And then this morning I would think that he would have the written testimony with him to answer your question. I mean, it's common sense that he should have the information with you to answer the questions that everybody's been asking over and over and over and over again from years past. And Senator Stedman, I have another question. There's a private property called Red Shirt, and since the owner of that place cannot fly his plane there anymore, he had asked the state of Alaska to build a road there. And I don't think that's right. He's taking money from the state that you guys keep saying over and over again that Sony needed. I mean, like these kinds of activities, even people that you claim as being too dumb to understand these things, we just are not dumb. I wish you would stop labeling people, and I'm in total agreement with the previous speaker. And so later on I will have more comments and questions, but I want to thank the people who have been tirelessly asking these questions over and over again, and your efforts to educate speakers like Senator Stedman and others. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for your testimony, Mary. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify? Anyone here in Juneau? Seeing no one, then we will close public testimony on Senate Bill 201. And there is no fiscal note. Senator Stemmen, do you want to join us again? And Senator Fairclough, do you have some additional questions?
Mr. Chairman, no. I just wanted to put on the record that I had been contacted by at least one individual that didn't testify today in support of Senator Stedman's bill, and their concern specifically was the trooper case where the trooper was not prosecuted or somehow got out of a trespass violation based on the current language and state statute, and so he was very interested in that person being held accountable. He felt like the public service person should have known that they were trespassing. So it was the wildlife issue. So they were in support of Senator Stedman's bill.
Okay. There you go. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just as a brief note under the notes on the decision on 1146-330, I want to just read this little paragraph here. Prerequisites for conviction. In order to convict a defendant for the offense of criminal trespass, the state is obligated to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he knowingly remained on the premises after personally being ordered to leave and recklessly disregarded a lawful order that he not remain. And I think that just reinforces the issue that we're not after the inadvertent folks that walk across someone's particular property. But it's so with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like the committee to note that Senator Stedman brought you a zero fiscal note, and that should be good for two brownie points.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Senator Stedman. That's very kind. Okay, so I think at the request of the sponsor, you want us to hold on to this, and it may show up in another bill, and that way we'll know when we see a crime bill or something with this topic in there, we know what it's about. If it isn't in that other bill, then we'll be ready to go with this one. All right. Thank you, Senator Stedman. So with that, we'll hold this bill aside. We'll take a brief at ease. Okay, Senate Finance is back. We're going to try to sneak in one more bill. We'll at least get introduction to it. We'll take public testimony this afternoon. That is House Bill 19. And just to let you guys know, too, the previous bill, Senate Bill 201, did have an indeterminate fiscal note. I think the sponsor had said zero fiscal note, but there, it is indeterminate. And the intent will be to go ahead and move that bill out, but we'll take it up this afternoon at our 1:30 meeting. So for now, let's take up House Bill 19, Permanent Motor Vehicle Registration Trailers. And Representative Stoltz was here, but he's left his trusty staff, Daryl Breeze, to introduce the bill to us. Daryl, the floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Senator, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Daryl Breeze, staff representative Bill Stoltz. House Bill 19 is legislation that would provide permanent registration for motor vehicles, non-commercial motor vehicles, excuse me, that are older than 8 years old, and non-commercial trailers. One of the requirements that was added to the bill as it moved through the process in the House was that municipalities and boroughs must pass an ordinance through their assembly or city council that would allow residents to acquire permanent vehicle registration permits. It was called the opt-in option, where the municipality has to opt in with the residents of the area, acquire this permanent registration if they choose. The registration is set for vehicles that are 8 years or older. We chose 8 years old because at that point a vehicle has reached a set standard for motor vehicle registration tax that is charged, and that's the tax that is collected by the Department of, or Division of Motor Vehicles for the municipalities. There's 16 municipalities in Alaska that charge a motor vehicle registration tax. And it's at 8 years old, the rate flattens out and remains the same for the life of the vehicle. Previous to that, the rate is higher and it decreases down until the vehicle reaches 8 years old. For a fee of $25 on top of the regular biennial fee that you pay when you go to DMV for registration, you can acquire permanent registration if the municipality or borough allows that to take place by passage of an ordinance. The same is true with non-commercial trailers. For a payment of the biennial fee and an extra $25 fee, people can register a boat trailer, snow machine trailer, horse trailer, any non-commercial trailer that they have permanently, so they don't have to. I've been guilty of forgetting to register the snow machine trailer and wanting to go snow machining, and I've got to go to the DMV and get it re-registered. And this is just a convenience thing with the trailers. Just all too often people forget because they may not use it. The snow might not be well. There might not be good fishing to take the boat out, work, depending on where you're at. The trailer registration also is response to action that was taken by the legislature in 1998 when they granted permanent trailer registration to commercial trailers. The trailers hauling groceries, gravel, moving freight around Alaska can register for a flat fee of $20. And it just seemed fair that we extend that same option to non-commercial trailers and the residents of Alaska to have that option. I guess that's a brief synopsis of the bill. Important thing to note, DMV brings in approximately $70 million in vehicle registration fees. $50 million of that is beyond what they require to operate. So they're bringing in extra money out of the pockets of Alaskans. And this legislation offering permanent registration will put the money back in the pockets of Alaskans to spend in their local communities, to spend on their children, to spend on improving their lives, as opposed to the money going into state coffers.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Daryl. Question, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the local option allow for either or both, say that a community wanted to just have non-commercial trailers be eligible for this permanent license?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, yes, that it does. It allows them to pass an ordinance to allow either one of them or both of them to be an option that's available.
Thank you.
Okay. Additional questions? Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, I'll just throw it out. Why not just get rid of the whole registration concept?
Well, that's a good idea. there's safety and ownership issues and liability issues by registering a vehicle and determining who the owner is. I think eliminating that opens up a Pandora's box for several other legal issues that could be involved. I don't mind the idea personally, but I think there's It's a discussion that hasn't been had about this bill that would, if this was the will, we'd have to research that and determine what the ramifications of that action would be.
Okay, and perhaps, too, you may want to address that question to Amy Erickson, who's online with the Anchorage, or she's in Anchorage with the Department of Motor Vehicles. Additional questions? Okay. Senator Bishop, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Darrell, and this bill now is for unorganized boroughs. It would affect unorganized boroughs.
Correct.
And a municipality. So Fairbanks and the North Star Borough aren't on here? On your?
I believe they are actually on that list. That they're just listed in combination with other boroughs. Let me find the sheet there so I can...
Representative Stoltz, if you want to join your trusty staff, you're welcome.
It's not on here.
No, you're right. I don't see Fairbanks on the list here. I'm sorry.
So it's, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Senator Bishop.
Darrell, this is optional. I mean, if this bill passes, the borough or municipality can opt in or out to adopt what this bill does. Correct. As far as registration.
Correct. The list you're looking at, I believe, shows the motor vehicle registration taxes, the boroughs that collect, that charge that.
Right.
So seeing Fairbanks isn't there, my understanding is Fairbanks probably doesn't have motor vehicle registration tax, or it was an oversight in leaving them off.
I'm not clear on that either.
The option to offer that is available to the borough to decide, hey, we want to allow our residents to have this option or not. It's a vote that would take place at the local level to decide this is an opportunity that we want to offer to the residents of our borough or municipality.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Representative Stoltz, did you have any comments you wanted to make?
Well, I appreciate the consideration of this bill. I think it's... I think the fiscal concerns have been addressed. The concerns, I think, although Bill Stoltz, House District 11, rural Southern Matsu and Chugiak, and I think the fiscal issues that many of the folks from AML and other jurisdictions expressed have been addressed through the local option. We do a lot of things here, local option. The mayor of Anchorage, Mr. Sullivan, has made it real clear he didn't like this bill. The Matsu Borough has endorsed the legislation, and our Matsu Borough Mayor, Mr. DeVilbiss, is supportive of it, but it will still have to go through either a local ordinance at the Assembly or a vote of the people, whichever way that entity. And that's fine, and I think Matsu may or may not, but at least they'll have the option. I don't know what kind of Anchorage has other issues they want to spend the money on, and Mr. Sullivan has other issues he wants to spend the money on. I'll leave that to them. I guess on this now, it's almost a Matsu bill now because they're the ones that have expressed the most support, but I think a lot of Alaskans are interested in it, but the decisions will be made at the local level.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Stoltz. We only have a few minutes left. I would like to get Amy Erickson's comments. She's the DMV director. I'm not sure what we're doing to her business, so I'd like to hear. Ms. Erickson, are you online? Is she online? Okay. Amy, we can't hear you. Are you with us?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Sorry, I was in another meeting.
Yep, no problem. I figured you had us on mute. Okay, so are you familiar with House Bill 19 and what it the intent is? Do you have any comments?
I am, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Amy Erickson, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. I'm sorry, I missed Mr. Breeze's testimony so far, but DMV would have no problem implementing this bill if passed. We already issue permanent tabs to seniors and could certainly do so if a permanent registration were opted in by any community.
Okay, very good, thank you. I apologize, Amy, it looks like we also have Colleen online with DMV as well, so But you answered my question. Okay. Well, we'll look. Yeah.
Can I just put one thing on the record for the fiscal impact?
Go ahead.
Even had the most... I think the most speculative fiscal impacts have been overstated because we all know Alaska is a fairly transient state. The vehicles don't last as long up here. The person is really taking a gamble on whether or not their vehicle is going to be worth it's going to be worth the registration increase, and they're mostly doing it for convenience, especially on the trailers. And as we know, a lot of our constituents are a lot happy the less they have to deal with government. But I think the department or the division has been responsible in doing the most conservative speculation about how much potential revenues might have been lost in there. And I don't fault them for that. I just disagree with some of the assumptions, but I think they were being responsible as folks that are trying to get as much from the public as they can.
Well, very good. Let's. We're going to be on the floor here in 15 minutes, so let's take public testimony. I know Representative Stoltz, you have a committee meeting. Hopefully, your trustee staff can, Daryl can join us, and we'll continue discussion on this at 1:30 or whenever we get off the floor. We have the operating budget on the floor today. So with that, we'll be adjourned till 1:30.
We have a little education bill.
Back on the record, just quickly, I was supposed to make an announcement that. I'd like to rescind my. It wasn't a motion, was it? I want to rescind my action to adjourn. We are still back. I just need to make announcement that any amendments to the capital budget need to be to Suzanne or myself by tomorrow at 1:00. And then also, just for the record, this afternoon we'll be taking up the extending senior benefits. I know there's a couple people here for that. House Bill 263, as well as House Bill 19, and hopefully we'll revisit Senate Bill 178. So now we are adjourned until 1:30.